Welcome to Big Blend Radio, where we celebrate variety and how it adds spice to quality of life. Welcome to Big Blend Radio's Quality of Life show. We're very excited today. We have veteran psychologist Dr. Ronald Ruff joining us on the show. He ran a private practice for 48 years and now has created what is an essential resource for parents, and I'm going to say caregivers too, who are searching to find the best ways to actually raise happy, productive, successful children. And I think this is really, and self-awareness, this is really important. He's got a new book. It's coming out on June 11th, 2024, but you can pre-order it right now. It's called Raising Children to Thrive, Affect Hunger, and Responsive Sensitive Parenting. So you know I want to know what this affect hunger is. So he's going to talk about that. And I encourage you to go to his website, ronaldruff.com, and that's R-U-F-F, ronaldruff.com. And you can order Raising Children to Thrive now on Amazon, all those great places. But welcome to the show, Dr. Ruff. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you. It's a real honor and privilege to be with you on your formidable podcast. And I'm excited to be here and to share whatever I can on behalf of helping parents to help children, given all the problems that youth have, not just in our country, but in the world. And thank you for the opportunity, Lisa.
I'm really excited about it and reading and the, you know, getting into it because, you know, your background is pretty incredible and your family is incredible too. And I think that you probably had that kind of support, you know, that network of seems very respectful and nurturing at the same time. And, you know, I want to talk about the, you know, the actual title of the book, but also get into the point of why you wrote this. I mean, 48 years of being, you know, having a private practice, but also you've worked in clinics, you've worked with teens at risk, teens, you know, in addiction, you know, talk to, you know, kids that really need help, you know, that have, you know, kind of lost their way from, you know, maybe abuse and things like that. And that's something that really resonated reading in your book. Part of why Nancy, my mom, I call her Nancy because we work together.
Okay.
But part of why we started our tour across the country of documenting parks and public lands was to connect them more with their community for better health on all levels for everyone and the natural world. And part of it was we saw so many cases of families that were living a homeless life. And this was back after the crash in 2008. We went on a tour around the country and we went, oh, you know, tourism and actually having this commitment to community could really help this situation. And it was back 2011, 2012, we interviewed a lady, Pat LaMarche, who did extensive work in regards to folks dealing with being homeless. And of course, this is across the country. It is everywhere and it's around the world and it's not going to get that. It's not just going to magically disappear. I mean, of course, we have refugees, we have, you know, climate change, we have war, we have all these reasons of that. And then our country. So there's definitely a financial reason. There are addiction reasons, opioids and all of that. But at that time, the average age of a homeless person was 9 years old. And we were in shock and horror. And through some of the interviews we've done now, you know, people keep going, oh, you know, there's a negative, you know, attack on, you know, our fellow human beings that are in a different situation. And everything it comes down to is trauma. So I think your book is so important because I think a lot of our youth are going through trauma that we're not even recognizing. Obviously, they're going through a lot of fear through climate change, fear of security reasons at school. The world is changing, right? And they've gone through the pandemic if they're, you know, a teenager. And now it is just a very different world. So all those reasons. And now you have a book that is not, you know, woo-woo. It is scientific, science-based, evidence-based, and also from your many years of working in the field to be able to say, the evidence is there, the science is there, and I've actually seen this in action as well. So, do you feel that? I mean, I'm feeling a little urgent even as I'm saying this big introduction about your book.
Well,
But
I thank
yeah.
you. I thank you for describing what I did and what's going on in the world with children. I couldn't agree with you more. And the trauma and the crisis in youth mental health, certainly in America, was a primary stimulus for my writing this book. And yes, I worked with a wide range of diagnostic disorders. I saw children, I saw adolescents, I saw adults from all walks of life, from all diverse backgrounds, cultures, and so on. But I did have a high number of my patients who had incurred some type of trauma. And it could have been sexual abuse, physical abuse, but actually many of the youngsters who I saw, the trauma was just simple, I won't say simple in quotes, but neglect. In other words, from the time they were born through their development, they did not have a close, sensitive, responsive mother and or father to help raise them. Some raise themselves. And actually, the highest incident of maltreatment of children is neglect. It's not abuse. Abuse is physical abuse is about maybe 15 to 18%, but the highest incidence of mistreatment of children is child neglect. And it's harder to see that because it, you know, you don't see the scars on a child, or you don't see children not having food to eat. But neglect has serious consequences in a child's development. Most of the children in our crisis in mental health in our country now experience psychological disorders, be they depression or various behavioral problems or drugs or addiction to electronics and games and so on, comes from a lack of responsive, sensitive parenting. And it's hard to imagine, but I can't tell you the number of youngsters, either my patients in hospital setting, acute care hospital or long-term residential care, or outpatient, Lisa, who told me that they would rather be physically abused or hit with a belt than totally rejected by their mother, especially, wow, and also father. And I have one in my book, Raising Children to Thrive book, which is coming out on June 11th, as you mentioned. I have one story or anecdote of when I was sitting in a hospital, acute care hospital, waiting for a mother to arrive for a family therapy session. And that was all about her son being rejected. He was felt totally unwanted. And that session is the most extreme pain I ever felt in my 48 years of tens of thousands of hours of psychotherapy. So the idea of physical abuse and neglect need to be understood, because the physical pain of the pain of physical abuse, and I'm not saying it's at all justified. I'm saying some children would rather get the attention of the parent and be hit or yelled at and screamed at and maybe put in a room or locked up, whatever, that type of abuse, because it's short term. But the worst pain a child could feel is a mother saying, I wish I had never born you.
And do you think that sometimes we, our lifestyle, because I know a lot of parents, the worst thing, they don't want to be a bad parent. That's not their intent. Maybe the child in their life is by accident, or sometimes you become an adoptive parent, you know, as a, maybe the stepmom or stepdad, and you make a very clear that a mother could be anyone in their lives. You know, that maternal nurturing is so crucial that it could be, you know, you may have two mothers in your life, and one could be biological, but the stepmom sometimes might be stepping up a little bit more. You know, it's yes. Interesting that the term stepmom, right? Stepping up, you know, to
exactly
to yep. taking on.
Well,
so,
yes, that's very true. I wrote this book for the vast majority of people who came to my mind in writing this book had good intentions. They loved their child, but for whatever reason, they just didn't know who to turn to. They wanted to be better parents, but they didn't know how. And generally speaking, we human beings tend to parent our children as we were parented, good, bad, or otherwise. And because someone had a bad experience as a parent doesn't mean that they want to continue it with their own child. To the contrary, but there aren't a lot of resources for parents, unfortunately. Our mental health delivery system, if you will, is overwrought right now. There aren't enough therapists to go around. There is a crisis. Dr. Murthy, our Surgeon General, has declared a crisis in youth mental health. There are too many children who are committing suicide or have severe behavioral disorders. There are, at last estimate that I saw, the statistic is that the schools require at least 100,000 behavioral health specialists, social workers, psychologists, to deal with the crisis in the schools. So we do need resources. And I realize that some people may think that, you know, a book can't be helpful, but my book, and then I also developed a workbook for parents. Yeah. So that they can, on a daily basis, have a structured 30-day program in which they can work with their child and chart it and log it in. And it's a companion to the book, because the book, I understand, you know, for some parents, you know, the concepts may not be very friendly to them or familiar, but they will definitely come to life when they apply it in these daily exercises for the 30-day program with their child. And so, but I'm hoping that parents will realize that there are many resources. There are books and there is help for parents. Mm-hmm. I was among various roles that I played and opportunities I had to help children and parents. I was psychologist for the second largest juvenile court in the country, largest in the sense that we saw about 6,000 children a year.
Wow.
Yeah, and I was also psychologist for the Juvenile Detention Center. And it wasn't uncommon for parents to say, "Dr. Ruff, you know, I'm sorry my child was arrested, but for the first time I realized that there's help out there. I had no one to turn to." So parents are well-meaning, And there are places for parents to turn to, their community mental health centers, and there's private help, and there's help within the community. But the crisis is so great right now in helping youth and parents that there is a shortage of providers right now.
Well, I think having a book and the workbook is really helpful, because it's also, you know, if you look at single parents trying to make ends meet, right?
Yes.
And maybe not having the insurance world, the medical system is not easy. Truly, it's not. You know, I have friends who are going through some very life-threatening illnesses, and the worst part of it is going through the system. You know, it's like,
oh, yes.
You know, so having a book and having, you know, because I think there's the reading part, and you share stories in there, so you can relate. It makes things very, you can start to understand. And when you get upset, and no one's happy in a family when someone, you know, it's like, I don't know what to do with you, and the kid slams the door, and, you know, that's it. Oh, I'm going to tell me that kind of, it becomes this drama, and it escalates, and it can escalate into something way more than it should have been, you know?
Yes.
And what
yes.
I like about the workbook is, like you said, it provides the structure. And I think that's the thing, you know, kids want structure. You know, and this sounds weird, but we do a lot with pets and animals, and we notice the difference between, as we travel the country, we pet sit because we can do our work, so that everyone knows this on our show. And I can tell you the difference between parents who, pet parents who treat their animals by, here, I'll stop you barking by giving you a cookie, versus let's do some training and attention. And the animals respond incredibly by having this attention and structure. And that's part of why we pet sit, is because we're keeping up with the animal's routine and structure, so that they feel loved and cared for, and then don't have separation anxiety disorder, which really
that's
happens.
Exactly. If I could use that as a example and segue into one of the three main concepts in my book, which is affect hunger. There's three central concepts. You know, there's a responsive sensitive parenting, and there's affect hunger, and and intersubjectivity. But everything now, the cutting edge science says that children at birth are born into intersubjectivity. That means that children have an intersubjective sense when they're born of interaction. They crave and need and are hungry for affect or emotions and touch in their life. An infant's first language is touch. And just like pets and animals, they understand if someone is out there caring for them by being touched. And there's so many children who were never held or touched. And that has a severe effect on their development. And it was a psychiatrist in 1937, David Levy, who wrote a paper called Primary Affect Hunger. And he defined it as, the term means an emotional craving for maternal love and other feelings of protection and care implied in the mother-child relationship. And he showed that children who lack a responsive, sensitive parent and intersubjective interactions and warmth and touch at birth, if that continues and if it's severe neglect later on, those are the children who will not be resilient. They will show problems of depression and other psychological disorders. So it is critical for children to have a responsive parent, and the attachment bond between mother and child needs to start at birth. And one of the biggest differences in and child development now, the cutting edge research is that children really are born with this capacity to interact with adults. Sigmund Freud and Jean Piaget, the Swiss famous psychologists, were very successful in what they did, but they both felt that a child is born as a tabula rasa, as Descartes would say, with an empty brain. Like, in other words, children didn't grow and develop a self and understand how to interact until they were older. But it's exactly the opposite. Science says that you need to interact with your child beginning at birth. And in my book, I talk about Serve and Return. The Center for the Developing Child at Harvard came out, or is one of the leading resources for information on child development. And it's called, they have a model that they developed and that scientists and psychologists develop. It's called Serve and Return, that whenever your child gives a response, that's the serve. You have to return it with your own response. And that kind of interaction within a loving, close, mutual relationship will bear fruit in later social and emotional development. In fact, without it, a healthy social, emotional, and later cognitive development will not occur. And what's critical, and I mentioned this in my book, is that there are various layers of a child's development, but the first and critical primary foundation is an emotional foundation. The cognitive foundation and cognitive development comes after you have a solid emotional development.
You know, and that emotional development, it does come from that structure and that nurturing and that, you know, feeling that you're loved and cared for. And I think we've gone through different generations of parenting techniques, like you were saying about, you know, parents are learning from their parents. And it used to be like, you know, don't, you know, if your kid falls down, don't, you know, make a big deal of it. Just ignore it. So, you know, you're not allowed to whine. You're not, you know, children are better seen and not heard, you know, all of those things.
Yeah.
And so I think we're still washing that out. And we also went through a time where a lot of kids were latchkey kids, you know, came home from school and watched TV. And then it's like, okay, then the next wave of kids, then they're all being called helicopter moms and oversensitizing your kids. And, you know, so they don't have, we've got to have that balance of, nurturement. And then if you put the structure there, then can't you let your child have some freedom to become themselves if that structure is there?
Right. And the limits. Yeah. Children need to know that they are loved, and there are just too many children who lack a primary caregiver. And also the cutting edge science and the science of child development now is different, because it focuses on a child having a mind of his or her own. It's not like, listen to me, I'm the parent, and you'll do exactly as I say because I'm the authority and I'm the boss. That is not the best way to raise a child. The best way is to understand that your child is unique and respect your child for his or her own uniqueness. And the best parents, according to Elizabeth Means, who did groundbreaking pioneering work in mind-mindedness is the best parents in the best responsive, sensitive parents are those who can pick up on their child's cues as to what's going on with them. And my belief is that parents through the years have turned to experts to help their child. And my book is a resource book and a guide for parents to become the expert themselves. I firmly believe that no one can or should understand their child beginning at birth more than a parent, because who would you want to be an expert? Someone else or yourself? I mean, it's we parents or a parent who really cares about their child whose responsibility is to get to know their child. And the more empathic and understanding they are and compassionate of their child and have mutual respect, the better their child will develop. And responsive, sensitive parenting is what we call bilateral. It means it's a genuine, mutual, I-thou relationship, as Martin Buber said. We treat someone as a thou, as a special, sacred, unique human being. And if that relationship develops, it's a give and take. Bilateral just means mutual. It's mutual respect. And when that relationship happens, then yes, children will need discipline. This is not going to be perfect. Nothing is. But my opinion and based on solid evidence-based practice experience myself over 48 years and the newer science of child development, Lisa, said that children will have the highest potential of having healthy development. Doesn't mean you're not going to have arguments with your parent, with your child. Doesn't mean you don't have to put your foot down and say, no, you know, you didn't do your homework, so you can't have computer time or do computer gaming. But it means that the opportunity is open. You have open communication, and without a close relationship, then no discipline will work. And to the extent that a parent can help satisfy or satiate the innate craving at birth of a child to have affect, to have affection, to have an exchange of emotions in his or her life. If that warm, close, nurturing relationship is there, you can work things out more easily. If it's not there, it's gonna be very difficult. And again, if a child feels neglected, the pain will always be there, and a child will somehow find a way to deal with it, be it drugs, be it develops a psychological disorder, whatever it is. But children need it. It's like, I guess to put it very succinctly, after 48 years and seeing so many traumatized, neglected children, I was in so much pain because I saw so many starving children. They were starving for affection and nurturance, and children need it. And I think that has a lot to do with our crisis in youth mental health right now.
And do you think it's, you know, I think your very first story in your book about Jonathan really kind of gets people to have some hope that this can make a change. And I think that was so good that you put it as the first story.
Yes,
because it can happen. And you just don't give up either. And I think a lot of times people just give up
Well,
on each
yeah,
other.
I'm happy you brought that up, and I appreciate it. Yes, John Bowlby, who first talked about responsive sensitive parenting, and is known for attachment theory, and the idea that children need to attach, said that it all has to happen in the first 3 years of life, and throughout my lengthy career in working in different settings, and especially hospitals and residential treatment centers, I realized that with intensive intervention, an attachment bond can be formed. And if there are enough people and a primary caregiver there to attach even later in life, it can happen. It may not be as successful an attachment, but the child will develop in a healthy manner, but it will take more intervention. But yes, you're absolutely right. It can happen later if it's a genuine, mutual, responsive, sensitive, relationship. And also, the advantage of responsive sensitive parenting is that children have basic psychological resources. Another name for it could be basic psychological components, and there are four. Children need a conscience to be healthy. They need a sense of empathy. They need to play. Too many children today lack a sense of play, and for them, their idea is being on a tablet all day, which is addictive and not healthy at all. And also, children need verbal and social stimulation, and so responsive, sensitive parenting gives children, by modeling the transference, it allows children to individuate and to gain those vital components and resources which they need to be healthy. I mean, if children do not develop a conscience and a sense of, moral appropriateness and a sense of right and wrong, they will not fit into society. So the responsive sensitive parenting really is modeling, and we human beings and children especially, starting at birth, learn from the empathy and the quality of the relationship. It's what we show our children, not what we tell them, but what we model for them. And that's why responsive sensitive parenting is also very critical.
Yeah, I think it is, and it's just, I think everyone has a child, they'll read a parenting book, especially, during the pregnancy time,
You're right.
the gestation period. It's like,
Yeah.
okay, now we're going to read everything. And
Right.
then all of a sudden, here's the child, and then it's like, oh my gosh. And then it's almost chaos management from there, which is because there's fear, there's all kinds of things happening that no matter what you read, it's like, okay, wow. And so then it just starts to be a daily thing. And then you
Yeah.
do go back into what your parents did. And I'm not knocking the parents of the past. It is just the way things, human beings evolve and we learn. And that's what's so great about your book is that you're looking at what is now, all these findings that we didn't have 20, 30, 40 years ago. We have them now, maybe
Right.
60 years ago. It's
Right.
changed. And so you do grasp at what you've, learned from your past, right? Instead of maybe looking towards the future and what does work and how our bodies work. I mean, I remember before it used to be like, oh, if you kill one cell, it never comes back. Well, that's not true anymore. We do
No.
regenerate cells. And remember, it would, the war on drugs, if you, and I'm not saying everyone take drugs at all. It's not that healthy, but if you do this, all your cells are going to go, and then you're going to be brain dead, basically.
Right. Yeah.
And
That's
well,
not
it
true.
Worked on me.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it worked on me.
Yeah.
So
I
that
know.
was good.
Well, that's unfortunate. Yeah. Yeah. Well, yes, you're right. And that's a very good point. I mean, we do have the science, and I hope that, you know, parents can read this book and learn from it. Affective neuroscience and neuroscience, tells us that, in utero, in the embryo, developing child gains 200,000 brain neurons a minute, and the infant has as many neurons in his or her brain as an adult, and there are as many neurons in a child's brain as there are stars in the Milky Way. And those neurons need to be stimulated beginning at birth. So if you think about it, if a child is neglected, neglect meaning a lack of a warm, nurturing, empathic, responsive, sensitive mother in his or her life, those brain cells will not be stimulated.
Mm-hmm.
And going back to what you said of what we knew 20, 30 years ago and what parents know now, a contribution of neuroscience is that a mother's brain changes when she's pregnant. The area of the brain that is known for empathy enlarges when a mother is pregnant.
Ooh,
so she
that's
can become
interesting.
So she's literally more empathic when her baby is born, and so she has even more capacity. Yeah, it's fascinating. There's so much out there, as you said, that we never knew. And if parents can read this book and think it through, and then also purchase the workbook and apply it in a unique way. All parents are unique. Every relationship with a child is unique. In their own life, it'll be, as I see it, a lifelong practice model where the parent can become the expert and know his or her child. And if parents keep that attitude that it's they who need to learn their child's cues beginning at birth, to know what cue means fear, what cue means hunger, which cue means I just need a hug. But, you know, there is a classic study by Harry Harlow. I don't know if you're familiar with it, in the University of Wisconsin decades ago. And he had monkeys who had not been fed and who were hungry. And he had wired monkey or made out of wire, wasn't a real monkey, with a warm, soft cloth around it. And the majority of monkeys, when they were hungry, went to the cloth monkey to feel a sense of warmth and touch, and it's called contact comfort. And that's what David Levy in 37 was referring to when he talked about affect hunger, that children need that sense of warmth and touch in their life, and they need it, believe it or not, more than they need food.
Yeah. That's really true. That's really true. I have heard of that study, and I think it's one that you can't ignore that. You know, it's when you read about it and you learn about it, it says it all, you know. But at the same time, I want to say really get the workbook, because I think so sometimes too, parents can also beat themselves up on maybe making mistakes, right? But we're all human, and you talk about humanness in your book, which I love, and I think that's a really important thing. And you know, one of my favorite quotes of all time is Joan Baez. And she says, action is the antidote to despair. So it's better to take action and start making those steps, and at least you have a formula and a structure to follow. So I think it will make everyone happier in a home to take those steps forward and grow together. So I really appreciate you joining us on the show, Dr. Ruff.
It's been my pleasure, and I appreciate the opportunity of informing parents and doing what I can. And parents need so much support. Being a parent, I think, is the most demanding, arduous process of anything in the world. And so
it's most important job. Yeah. It is the most important job. That's why I say, don't beat yourself up.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
You're growing in it too. So everyone, again, it's Raising Children to Thrive, Affect Hunger, and Responsive Sensitive Parenting. Excuse me. June 11th is when it's out. June 11th, 2024. Yeah, but you can get it now.
Yeah, it'll be through Amazon at this point.
Yeah, and so you can go to RonaldRuff.com, and that's R-U-F-F, RonaldRuff.com. Thank you so much, Dr. Ruff. You take care.
You too, Lisa. I appreciate the opportunity. Have a nice day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Big Blend Radio. Keep up with our shows at BigBlendRadio.com.